You're listening to the Pinto and White Shadow Show on KFGO.com and 740thefan.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 006 podcast of the Pinto and White Shadow Show on 740thefan.com and KFGO.com. I'm Daniel Pinto Gunderson, my co-host Brad the White Shadow Jones. Brad, let's get this out of the way right away. Where can we find you on Twitter?
Hey, all right, at the Bison Guy.
And you can find me at Pinto KFGO. If you have a question or comment for our podcast, email us, pinto.whiteshadow@gmail.com.
Look at that, you even got the email and everything. You're almost prepared today.
Almost ready to go. Yeah. Make sure and tune into 740 The Fan on Tuesday of this upcoming week. I'll be helping out Tang McNamara hosting the noon show, the Jack Michaels show, from 12 to 1. And yeah, was on last week as well. Was on Friday. Had a guy on from Fantasy Football, the Sirius XM Fantasy Football, which okay. I think you and I are going to address later is okay. Fantasy Football. Maybe not this week's podcast, but later.
Got to do it soon.
Yeah, he talked for literally the entire segment. He was full of knowledge. It's a great, great interview. I'd probably love to get him on this show if we could just to talk fantasy sure. football because it'd be really good, really informative. But he talked a lot. I didn't get a lot in. I did manage to mess up the fact that Ryan Drevlo is still on the team. I made the comment that Ryan Drevlo had graduated, the nose guard for the North Dakota State University football team, and somebody tweeted at me that he hadn't. And so already screwing up who is and who isn't on the Bison football team.
You're in midseason form.
Oh,
you're ready
yep,
to go.
Yep, ready to go.
We'll
for
get a
Kansas
few more
State.
Mispronunciations in there, and then, yeah, it's the Dan Gunderson we've all come to know and love.
Oh, yeah, as long as it's not Usiel Puig or anything like that, I can pretty much kind of mess my way around a name pronunciation. So make sure and check that out. Our blog is up, the Pinto and White Shadow show blog. We had a bet last week.
We did.
And that is up on the show blog. If you want to check that bet out, I cut out the audio of Brad and I kind of going through a bet. We do this thing where it's the ongoing wager. And essentially, whenever we find something that we may be able to bet on, if you will, we'll put it up on the show blog. Last week's was Brock Jensen being named to the All-Missouri Valley Football Conference team at the end of the season.
Either first or second.
Either first or second. Yep. Brad thinks that'll happen. I don't think it will. So there was that. That's up there. Then my interview I had with Josh Kinder of the Manhattan Mercury, the sports editor for the Manhattan Mercury down in Manhattan, Kansas. It's a lengthy interview, so make sure and tune into that. Check it out on KFGO.com.
For this ongoing wager thing, though, I think we've been talking about some different ideas for what to do to the loser.
Yes.
And we could use some of your help. I think the more input we can get, the better. If you have ideas as far as what the punishment should be to the loser of this ongoing wager, we're thinking we're going to probably at least go through the football season.
Yeah, football season, and then maybe when basketball starts.
Do a spring,
starts,
summer, something
spring,
like that.
Spring, summer, something
yeah.
like that. But yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Send those the email address. Again, that's
pinto.whiteshadow@gmail.com or
yes.
tweet at us yep. as well, at the Bison Guy, at PintoKFGO. Love your ideas. Love your input. Love to hear what you want to tell us to do.
I just started reading Matthew Berry's book, A Fantasy Life.
Okay.
The Talent Mr. Roto, senior fantasy analyst of ESPN. And one of the punishments that he talked about right away, these guys do a league where the loser of the league has to get a tattoo.
Oh boy, we're not doing
chosen
that.
By the winner. Oh no, we're not doing that. But chosen by the winner of the league. So in the 3 years, there was a Tebowing Care Bear. There was a Justin Bieber that says fantasy loser YOLO swag. and there was what was the other one? The Tebowing Care Bear, I thought, was pretty good. I
like
enjoyed
that
there
one
was some,
a lot.
The other one involved like a unicorn and a rainbow, I think. So.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
Oh, boy, that could get embarrassing for us.
It really could.
I think we're going to go try to keep it along the lines of no body ink.
Yeah.
Because we're not tattoo guys.
No, and I like my job. I'd prefer not to.
Well, you can't have your job if you have a tattoo.
Well, you could.
Is
but
it frowned upon?
Depending on where the tattoo is. I mean, I'm not going to go all Mike Tyson.
No, I yeah. would not a face tattoo.
Yeah.
Where would you get a tattoo? If you had to get a tattoo, where would you get it?
Oh, gosh. Tramp stamp, probably.
Really?
Have to get a tramp. No.
Boy, you're dirty.
No.
I'm that not. Is disgusting. See, I would go peck tattoo, but I have no pecs. I have moobs.
Yeah, okay.
But I'd go peck.
I'd probably go on the back or something, just because I so rarely have my shirt off that nobody would see it.
That's true.
I mean, I blind people with the shirt off.
But it would show up on you pretty well, because I'd assume you'd go black ink. not color, but black ink, and you're the white shadow.
Yeah, I mean,
it would come out pretty easily.
It would show out pretty well. Yeah.
See, I've heard the rib hurts a lot, but yeah. I don't know what I would get.
I've heard of people have done it on the wrist, and I hear that is excruciating. Going to tattoo right along. I've heard that's painful.
See, the one thing when it comes to tattoos, now we get into tattoo talk here on the Pinto White Shadow Show. I would go on the ring. The one thing I notice a lot of men have the ring tattoo. If they were to get married or something like that, it's just what happens if that marriage doesn't work out.
Yeah.
What are you going to do, laser etch it out? It sounds painful.
We're wusses.
Oh, yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, we're definitely wusses on this
show. Never would get a tattoo. So, again, if you want to give us some kind of feedback, again, tweet us, email us, Facebook us, whatever you want to do, and we'll get back to you. We'll probably implement some of those ideas. I was getting told last night, Brad, I was at a wedding, the Mike Hagen wedding. Congratulations to him, an old roommate of mine, former NDSU athlete, actually. Ran, I think, the decathlon for the NDSU track team. And I was being told last night by a few people that they listen to the podcast, so we thank them for tuning into this podcast. Colin Dusick was a friend of mine. I'm going to drop some names. Jordan Melander, another guy that said, yeah, I absolutely listen. And Mike Hagen said he's tuned in a couple times. My cousin Jake Canoda will listen to it before he falls asleep at night. So just had to get that out there, give him shout-outs. But, again, thank you, everybody, who tunes into this. And tell a friend.
My friends have to at least send an email something in. You got to ask a question if I'm going to shout it out.
You're telling me all week that, hey, these guys are listening. This is what we're getting. We got to thank Dom Izzo. Dom Izzo direct messaged you. Dom Izzo of WDAZY television. I don't even know.
WDAY. Come on.
WDAY. Well, Z, I grew up with the Z.
Oh, okay.
So that's why I get that. Sure. That's what the confusion is. Dom direct messaged you. So, Dom, thank you for listening. And, just got to get all the thank yous out there. I think we did everything we were supposed to do, the little house cleaning.
Let's talk some sports. Let's get into it.
Let's really get into it here on the Pinto and White Shadow Show podcast. And let's start with the
local.
So, Bison football had a chance to get out to practice this week a couple times. And a chance to talk to Chris Kleiman, defensive coordinator for North Dakota State University. We're going to play that interview for you in its length. It's about a four-minute interview, and then from there we will discuss what the defensive coordinator said. So here is Chris Kleiman with myself.
Here with the defensive coordinator for North Dakota State University, Chris Kleiman. Chris, first question I have for you, I've seen Levon Perry has been out here. I know the knee injury was an issue last year. Has he suited up at all so far through the first few practices, or what's his status?
Yeah, he suited up the first practice, and it was bothering him a little bit. So we kind of shelved him for a little bit, and we'll kind of reevaluate him later on. But obviously, you know, it was a late-season injury, so we got to make sure he's strong for the long haul for us.
Any other injury status updates on your defense, or is pretty much fresh? Ready to go?
No, that's the same stuff. It's we're practice five now. There's a lot of pulls and bangs and bruises and stuff. The only one that we're probably down a little bit right now is Brendan Pierre. That's a corner that's battling for a starting job. He's got a little hamstring. We hope to have him back probably on Monday, but he's missed a little bit of time. But Brendan's the type of kid that mentally he's fine. He just got to get the physical reps.
What position on the team have you been spending the most time with that you've had to put in the most work trying to get them technique down and fundamentals down, all those kinds of things?
Well, we've got great coaches. So everybody just works their position with, obviously, specifically with the safeties and the corners. So for me, it's trying to make sure that we have that second corner, that third corner, that fourth corner opposite Marcus. You know, the other coaches do a great job with the linebackers and the D-line, so I'm specifically looking at the secondary.
Speaking of the linebackers, depth there, again, last year was an issue. You had to play every linebacker 15 games, a lot of snaps. How are you trying to get your coaches and your players to increase the depth and show some trust in the backup linebackers?
Well, we've got really good athletes in here that we recruited. You know, we've got MJ Stump a year more knowledgeable. We've got Esley Thornton that we think is doing a really good job. That'll give us some depth, but you know, we're going to put some pressure probably on a couple of these young freshmen to at least learn some things that they may have to play.
Who has been the biggest surprise for you out of those maybe incoming freshmen or even redshirt freshmen guys that did get a chance to play now and kind of see that there's an opportunity there for them?
Well, it's not a redshirt freshman. It's just Esley. You know, it's hard for me to say with five practices of the true freshmen. We got some kids that are good athletes, but Esley's been the biggest surprise of a guy that's not one of those top three starters that we know Esley will be a major contributor, and we can take Carlton off the field or Travis off the field or Grant off the field and put Esley in there, and we don't think we'll miss a beat.
What are the players doing to stay focused? Long practice, practices before Kansas State and the start of the season. A lot of things going on. What do they do that you've seen here at practice, maybe off the field too, that they're doing to stay focused?
Oh, they just got to keep their bodies fresh. That's the hardest thing, you know, taking care of their bodies and stuff. But, you know, it's a grind. Everybody knows that fall camp's not easy. It's never going to be easy. So those kids, you know, they work hard, then they get off their feet with it. We have a lot of meeting time. That's probably the most important part after they get done here, is to make sure they get to the meetings and understand some of the mistakes they make, so that when we come out here the next day, we don't make the same mistake repetitively.
As a defense as a whole, you guys have been unbelievable the last two seasons. Would it be fair to say you guys have set some lofty goals for you as a group coming into this year that you're looking to set and things to move forward with?
Well, we've had some really good defense the last couple of years, but this is a new year, and we've got a lot of those kids returning, but we know the league we play in and the competition we have that you're not far from the bottom of that pole either. So our kids got to stay hungry. They can't be complacent. They've got to continue to work hard. We've got kids with great work ethic, so as long as we have that, we always will have a chance. But I've been real pleased with the way the kids have come out here and performed each day.
Final question for you, Coach. August 30th is going to come much sooner than we both realize. What are you doing yourself personally to stay focused and kind of keep your head in practices and in everything else before that Kansas State kickoff?
Well, it's just one day at a time for us. We've got to get kids better so that we know who those top 22 guys are. We know who the top 11 are. We know who a few backups are. We got to find those other guys, because we know we're going to need a lot of bodies when we go down to Manhattan. And that's what's got us as a focus as coaches, is who's that next guy in at each of these positions. And so you never get ahead of yourself when you come to fall camp, just trying to find that next body.
All right, thanks, Coach. I appreciate it.
You bet, thanks.
Again, Chris Kleiman, the defensive coordinator for North Dakota State University, did an interview with him earlier this week. The first thing we have to address is Levon Perry. I had asked him about that before Coach Bullen. We'll hear from him later in the show, but before Coach Bullen announced that Levon Perry will be suspended for the Kansas State game due to a DUI he received over the summer. He's going to plead guilty to that charge, but because of that DUI, Levon Perry will not be available for the Kansas State game. Brad, big deal with Levon Perry. How do you feel?
Big deal in what sense?
Big deal in the sense that he's not going to play the Kansas State game.
Not really.
Why is that?
I think they're deep there. And again, I think, and this is maybe for them, yes. For me, I'm not expecting a win out of the K-State game anyway. So if he's missing Missouri Valley games, or if he's missing an extended period of time because of an injury, that I have a concern with. Missing the K-State game, for me, that's if they win it. And I'm not saying they have no chance. I don't think they'll win. But if they win it, that's awesome. And that's going to be, you know, give them a little bit of headlines and certainly a boost going into the rest of the year. But if they lose it, they lost to a team that was in a BCS, a BCS game last year. Okay. You know,
yeah, that's
so. And again, they're deep. I mean, they've got, you know, Danny, he mentioned some of the guys that'll be in that, or well, Coach Bull will talk about some of those guys.
Yeah,
when we
absolutely.
Hear from him in a little bit. But they're just, I mean, they managed to win a national championship without him last year.
He missed the last five games after getting hurt on November 10th against South Dakota State in what I believe still to this day as a cheap shot.
You're not alone in that.
And there are a lot of people that feel that way. But I think NDSU did just fine in returning the favor when they played South Dakota State in the playoffs and held Zach Zenner and that South Dakota State rushing attack to 21 yards, I believe. Unbelievable defense.
And before you go, this kind of gets into what we talked about last week, where if they're missing one player at a position, they're going to be okay.
Right.
If it's, you know, all of a sudden, well, Danny's out and there's more people on that defensive front that are out, then there's a problem. But for him just missing one game, big picture,
it's not that big a deal. Yeah. I agree with you. Here's the other reason I agree with you, because you're right in saying that, you know, the Kansas State game, I think to me it's still a big deal because it is a big game and it's a very winnable game for NDSU in the sense that Kansas State loses, boy, I think it's something like 8 or 9 starters from last year's defense. They lose a Heisman candidate. They only return, they lost one of their top wideouts. They lost a ton of players, complete opposite of NDSU. Yeah. But it's not a big deal for me, because how effective would Levon Perry be? And again, we'll reference the Coach Bull interview one more time. He says in there that Levon Perry is ready to play. All right, what percentage is Levon Perry at? He could be at 50% and still ready to play. 100% Levon Perry is different than a 60% Levon Perry.
Another week to get him ready to go isn't the worst thing in the world.
Exactly. He's coming off a major knee injury. He didn't practice earlier this week. He may have gotten the pads on throughout the week. We don't know. I hadn't had a chance to get out there after Wednesday. But even with that being said, would he have been effective? How many snaps would he have played? This team, again, is deep at defensive line. I made the comment on 740 The Fan earlier this week is that this defensive line returns on the edges. Kyle Emanuel and Cole Jurek, two absolute great pass rushers. And then in the middle, it's Ryan Drevlo, Danny Lukey, Brian Schatz. That's deep. Plus, you have Mike Hardy, who's another guy on the outside there return. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. So to me, what you're going to see here is you're going to see guys, maybe freshmen, maybe redshirt freshmen, take the snaps that Levon Perry would have had. But there's going to be more snaps of Danny Lukey and Brian Schatz and Ryan Drevlo, those three kind of moving around. Two names that kind of popped out to me as freshmen, Nick Jacobson, a 6'3", 273-pound true freshman from Prescott, Wisconsin, and then Austin Farnloff, a guy that redshirted last year, 6'1", 264. They kind of fit in that area of Levon Perry's size, and what better opportunity for these two now that they know there's going to be a possibility of getting snaps against Kansas State now, where before you weren't sure. When you have four interior defensive linemen you can run out there, those guys may be looking on the sideline going, I don't know if we're going to get a chance to play. Now it's practice time to step up because we want to show we have the ability to go out there and play. So it's an opportunity for a defensive lineman to show what he's made of. Ezley Thornton in that interview was mentioned a couple times. He seems to be high on the list of coaches at NDSU, specifically Chris Klieman and head coach Craig Bull.
I believe I had that one.
And I you did. You really did. To you, is that a sign that, how do I put this? That is this a sign for you, Brad, that you're looking at this going, all right, Ezley Thornton's going to come out and he's going to make some big-time plays and we're not going to see Travis Beck or we're not going to see Carlton Littlejohn take as many snaps? Or is this just kind of what was supposed to happen through progress of him practicing more at this position? What do you think it's more of a result of?
It may be both, but I think it's more just getting the reps, and if the guy's an athlete and can play, then he's going to get the opportunity. And again, he's kind of your injury buffer, it sounds like, at all three linebacker positions. That he's, you know, if somebody gets hurt or anything, he's going to be the guy that's going to that's going to step in there. So we'll see. I'm curious, and what it doesn't get into there and what we really don't know at this point is what's his skill set? What makes him different? Where are his strong suit? Is he better in pass coverage? Is he good at reading quarterbacks? Is he a sound tackler? I mean, Grant Olson, he's a tackler and he's kind of the quarterback of the defense.
Right.
Okay, we know that from him. Little John's fast. Little John can move.
So can Beck.
And so can Beck as well. So, you know, what's his strong suits? And I think that's just going to come with time. We got to watch the games.
Let's get to the bowl interview because there are some comments in there that we've been talking about. Full disclosure, this was a group interview. You're going to hear Jeff Kolpak of The Forum. You're going to hear his voice quite a bit in this. I was a part of this. I do get a question in here. And make sure to pay close attention to the quote about Steve Walker, which is actually pretty hilarious.
So, and we got Kevin Schnepf in there,
and
too.
Kevin, yes, exactly. Well. So we'll make sure and give them credit because they were part of this interview, a majority of it. So let's get going here. Coach Bull, after Wednesday's practice, starts a little late, so I apologize for that, but he mentions Levon Perry to open it up.
Summer, he plans to plead guilty, and so he will not be playing at Kansas State. Other questions?
Well, how's his health, speaking of?
His health, he's playable. I mean, his health's fine. Not fine, but, I mean, it's definitely playable. But, you know, that's consistent with where we're at. You know, I looked at Levon and I sat down. I mean, he's remorseful for his actions. He's going to go through assessments. You know, as opposed to delaying everything, you know, it's been our pattern. He came in, basically said, Coach, I'm not contesting it. I'm guilty. I'm wrong. And so we're going to move forward.
Who's going to play in his place or start in his place?
Well, you're probably looking at Danny Lukey and Ryan Drevlo will be our starting two guys in there. And Brian Schatz will be backing those guys up. Anthony Boyd.
Yeah.
He's a great, you know, he's really a significant player, without question.
Any other starters? Is everybody else on tap to start?
Yes, I think a little bit concerned about Travis Beck today. I think his shoulder slipped in and out, so that he may not be in position to play. They were doing some preliminary work with his you know, concussion-like symptoms, those were starting to clear up. We weren't doing anything full contact, but his shoulder slipped out today, so that I'm sure doctors got to look at that.
That just occurred today then?
Yeah.
Wasn't,
and it came through just a freaky deal. I just reached out and grabbed a guy, and it's popped out.
Didn't he have that addressed in surgery?
Yeah. Yeah, it's unfortunate.
Concerning on that.
Yeah, we'll just see what the doctors say.
Yeah. I need some particular, like Peter Saintel, North Kid, he's walking on.
He will be, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. He's not here, though.
Not here in camp yet, okay. No.
How is your health injury status?
I think pretty good. We've had five vigorous practices, and I think we're on task. You know, the deal with Travis is unfortunate how long he's going to be out. I don't know. But I think outside of that, Ryan Smith is, we held him out of today's practice, but that's a little bit, you know, he's got a little bit of tendonitis in the hamstring. I think we're moving along pretty good.
What about as far as Carson Wentz? Where do you see his role?
Well, you know, both he and Brock are having really good camps. You know, we'll go into the game. We're going to start Brock Jensen unless something happens that I can't see in between now and then. But Carson's playing well, and you know, whether we get into playing Carson in the middle of a game, you know, we haven't finalized our final game plan yet.
Yeah.
But I can tell you, I feel very comfortable with Carson Wentz going in at any time of a ball game. His competency and his execution, understanding our offense, has improved, and Brock has too.
Where is he as far as talent-wise and all the quarterbacks you've had in NDSU here? I mean, Brock's got two titles, but Carson ability-wise?
Well, right away you look and you see a guy that's 6'5", and he runs pretty good. Believe me, I watch him closely, and Brock has had a really good fall camp. But, you know, if you looked at the prototype, but I think both of them, heck, I think Brock's 6'3½", and Carson's 6'5", and they're – you know, they look a heck of a lot different than Steve Walker. Let's put it that way. And Steve, I'm sorry, but he'll appreciate that. Steve will get a chuckle, and you can print that in the paper.
Depth at linebacker, have you noticed anything with the young guys stepping
up? Well, Esley Thornton has been playing pretty well. You know, the other guys, they don't know if they're on foot or horseback yet. The freshman guys are – it's a Tampa 2 system for a linebacker. There's a lot of intricate parts, and it's what's the learning curve is holding them back from their physical ability. They look good doing special team stuff, but right now it's too early to assess, saying, okay, we're gonna play this guy and that guy.
Morlock part of that group still learning?
He's playing running back.
Oh, he's running back.
He's running back, yeah. And he's looking good there, Kevin, and you know, I think he'll we're looking at him hard on special teams as well.
Here's the one thing I will say about the Carson Wentz comment.
Boom, shakalaka!
I'm pretty sure that I called this, that he's going to see some significant set. Now, that's one of those things where it sounds like Coach Bull trusts Carson Wentz to run the offense, and we'll talk offense next week because I think I have an interview with offensive coordinator Brett Vegan set up, so we'll talk offense next week. But that's one of the deals that Coach Bull just, he feels confident in the fact that, you know, Carson Wentz can go out there and run the offense. Brock Jensen's going to be my starting quarterback, but Carson Wentz,
we'll get into that next week.
Is a guy that I can trust. The one thing I do want to talk about off of that is the Travis Beck injury. And it sounded like it was more serious than it sounds. You know, just a shoulder kind of popping out. You think, oh, okay, well, you put it back in place. He avoids contact for a couple weeks. He'd be ready to go. But the way Bull approached that, it sounded as if Beck might not be ready to go for Kansas State. Is that kind of what you got from that, Brad? What did you take from that?
I think that's a little premature. I think I got that he was concerned that something like that happened just because he just reaching out and trying to tackle a guy. I mean, that a motion that simple and that common,
yep,
that raises a red flag.
Yes.
And that makes him concerned. I think it's way too early to say anything about the K-State game. I didn't get anything like that at all from that interview, but it's something that they're going to monitor and figure out if that was just a fluke deal or what.
That was about the fifth practice after the fourth or fifth practice. So you're like you said, fluke deal. The other thing too is that from the sounds of it, Bull, they don't know the freshman linebackers. They don't know if they're on foot or on horseback. Yeah. Now, I look at that, and is that a simple indication of they're just trying to learn the system, which Bull went into after the question. But is that to you, Brad, just a simple indication of they're young, they don't understand the Tampa 2 system because they were playing basic defense in high school? Or is it more of a, boy, these freshmen haven't gotten the opportunity to play reps, well, so I don't know if they're going to be ready in time.
You know, if I was a media member at this press conference, the follow-up question is that normal? I mean, are they where freshmen normally are at this point of learning the system?
My God, are you still talking?
You just wanted to play some Mikael, didn't you? I think that would have been the question to ask. If they're on pace where freshmen usually are in the system, then I'm not concerned.
Yeah.
If they're behind where people usually are, okay, then maybe we need to keep a closer eye on it. But unless we know that, it's tough to say.
Esley Thornton praised up and down. I think Brad Jones called that, so we'll give him a So Brad Jones feeling that Esley Thornton, and it sounds like both Bull and Coach Kleiman are high on him, something you expected, and he's going to see some
time. And I think it's just as simple as kind of what we said with the freshman. It's just he's been there, and he knows it a little bit better, and I think that's the big thing. I'm not saying he's the most talented linebacker or will be the best linebacker of that group, but for this year, especially the beginning of this year, I think he's going to be the guy that will have more of a chance to make an impact.
Let's get into some expectations for this defense overall, Brad. What do you expect out of them coming into this year? And I'm not asking you to put a point total or anything like that on it, but you think of the last 30 games, 12 points per game allowed. That's pretty significant for a group that returns 10 of its 11 starters.
It's tough for expectations to be higher. I mean, really, when you win two national titles and you're bringing pretty much everybody back, except for Andre Martin.
Yep.
Is he the only guy
he's
they lose?
The only guy.
And Bobby Ullman, but they're getting Colton Hegel back.
Right.
So, I don't know that it's possible for expectations to be higher for this group. I think the legitimate expectation for this group is that they are one of the best defenses that NDSU has ever seen.
Oh yeah.
I don't know how you set the expectation any lower than that for this group.
It is, in my mind, they have an opportunity to go down this year as the best defense in Bison history if they can three-peat and do it in a way where they just dominate throughout. Because last year was better than most of these guys the first run through the national title. They didn't really pick up defensively towards the end of the season. Is really, you noticed it during the playoffs, you're going, boy, this defense is dominant. So that Georgia Southern game, they dominated that in the semifinals.
Both Georgia Southern games.
Well, not so much last year when you look at how many yards they ran.
Yeah, I mean, the year before,
the first year in 2011, they really turned it up a notch against Georgia Southern. Had some trouble containing the triple option, both against Wofford and Georgia Southern. Wofford ran for a lot of yards. They just couldn't score.
Yeah.
But again, that's kind of
the way. But that's been Bull's defense for a long
time.
Yeah,
exactly.
We'll give up yards, but we're not going to let you score.
Exactly. But last year, the dominance from start to finish was pretty unbelievable. When you think of a couple games, Missouri State to me is a game where they gave up a defensive touchdown. Indiana State, for example, they gave up two defensive, or no,
I'm curious,
pick sixes, I should say.
I was going to say, and I wonder, I was just going down that road as well, is what, because they gave up, was it 12? Was that their points per game that
in
they
the
gave
last
up last
30,
year?
And
oh,
I didn't
it's the
go,
last 30, okay.
The last 30, which is two seasons combined, and I didn't go through and look at, okay, which one of these were defensive touchdowns,
which one of these were special teams
touchdowns.
10-9.
They could be better, exactly.
To me, special teams, that still counts a little, because there's a lot of defensive guys that are on special teams, but I mean, they can't do anything about the pick sixes.
Yeah.
But, and usually, and you know me, I'm usually the, let's settle down here on the expectations is usually the
way
that I am. But you can't.
Not with this group.
This
defense is so unbelievable. To expect anything less would be a shame. You expect them to go out. You expect them to pitch a couple shutouts against some weak offensive teams.
And even you expect them to keep some good offensive teams in single digits.
Exactly.
You just do.
I think the best example of what they can do defensively is last year when you have a team like South Dakota State has a 2,000-yard runner in Zach Zenner, and they get 21 yards on the ground, score 3 points the entire game. It's pretty unbelievable to me. So I did this on my blog, Pinto's Points, and you check that out on 740thefan.com. I previewed the defense for NDSU on my Friday post, and I gave out who I believed would be starting. at certain positions. My defensive line is Kyle Emanuel.
Are you really going to go through it? It's the same lineup
Kyle
as
Emanuel,
last year.
Cole
Come
Jurek,
on now.
Ryan Drevlo and Levon Perry. I put Levon Perry in there because we think he's going to start. Of course, the linebackers are Travis Beck, Carlton Littlejohn, Grant Olsen, Marcus Williams, Christian Dudzik, Colton Hegel will be in the defensive secondary, and I think Brendan Pierre will start at that other corner, although bad hamstring according to Kleiman, and he probably hasn't practiced at all this week and will try to go again on Monday. But again, he was a guy who actually started last year, Brendan Pierre, and then the job got taken away from him by Andre Martin. So, but to me, that's the starting 11 defensively, and Brad has no objections to it because he thinks it's just going to be the same as last year. So let's move on to
regional.
And we have a lot of topics to talk about, and I actually came up with some. I'm impressed by myself, really, I came up with these topics.
Don't break your rotator cuff trying to pat yourself on the back here.
The first one I want to talk to, let's get away from football a little bit because we're going to get back to it. The first one I want to get to is this Shabazz Muhammad deal. So he's sent home from the rookie transitional program or the rookie transition program.
Symposium, wasn't it? The rookie symposium?
It's a program.
Okay.
It's symposium program.
Same thing.
Same thing to me. I talked about it because I hosted the Front Row show on 790. I talked about this. What kind of deal is this to you, Brad? Is it a big deal that he got sent home from this? And we should say he got sent home because he broke a rule. He had a girl in his room.
Yep.
Which is against the rules.
Yep.
Okay. Is it a big deal or is it not a big deal?
I think it's got to be at least a medium deal.
Okay. Why?
Because there's already questions about him coming in. There's questions about his attitude. There's questions about, you know, just the way that he conducted himself at UCLA. And then the first thing that you're hearing about him a few weeks after the, you know, or a month and a half after the draft is you're getting booted out of the rookie transitional program. That puts you right on par with Michael Beasley. We got him and I think Chalmers got booted out for pot back in the day.
It was actually Darrell Arthur.
Darrell Arthur, okay.
Was the guy because it's Deadspin.com was the website that I saw being booted out, and they mentioned that Chalmers and Arthur getting booted out for smoking pot.
Okay, Beasley, it was just every other time.
Yeah, Beasley just does it, and doesn't care.
But I mean, it's got to be at least some sort of deal when a guy who you're already a little shaky about comes in, and the first thing you hear about him is you're getting sent home from the rookie symposium.
Yeah.
I mean, I can see a no big deal for you coming.
Because
the
reason he got sent home to me, it's just, why? I mean,
but that's just it. You don't break the rules right away. I mean, if that's, it tells me about a bigger, it tells me a little bit about a bigger personality trait of, if I don't really agree with the rule, I'm not going to follow it. If I don't necessarily like the defense that's called, I might not give 100%. I mean, I think it goes right along those lines.
I see where you're going down with that road. But to me, it's not a big deal because of the reason he got sent home. He broke a rule, granted. That's not in question. But why send him home? It's not like he broke a law, as the other two were doing. Okay? He broke a rule. Do something internally about it. Say, okay, this is the deal.
I don't think this is a Timberwolves thing, though. I think internally the NBA did do something about it. They didn't fine him. They didn't do anything.
Fine him. They should have fined him. They should have not sent him home. Because now he has to go back, which is the other thing, too, because you have to complete this. So he has to go back next year with all the other rookies that are going to come in an amazing draft class they're supposed to be. But why not fine him? Why not say, hey, look, you're in the NBA now. This is your big kid job. Sending him home to me is kind of one of those things you do when you're in college. Oh, you broke a rule at our camp while we're, you know, whatever away from UCLA. See you later. We'll see you when you get back. This is your suspension. You know, don't make him run grinders. Don't make him, you know, embarrass him in front of the team. Fine him.
I can see the other side of the argument. I don't think you're making the right point on the other side of the argument. If you're going to make that argument, I think the argument is this information is so important for rookies to learn that we're going to just send you home and not make you listen to the rest of the information that we're going to talk about, whether it's how to handle your money or you know, how to do all these things. I mean, it almost speaks to the fact that you can go a year without hearing this.
Yeah, by sending him home.
By sending him home. Yeah, so I mean, from that side of things, I guess I could see it, but I still don't think it's no big deal. I think if you're already making the headlines for the wrong reason, that's not a great start to a guy who people already have questions about.
To me, again, If you fine him, you're done with it, you move on, and then maybe next year have him come back and give a talk to those rookies saying, here's how I screwed up. Here's what you're not supposed to do at this certain thing.
Here's how you don't get caught doing this.
Here's how you don't get caught. And then I guess earlier this week, or later in the week on Friday, I want to say, Flip Saunders, the GM, said that.
Love this quote.
Supposedly, and this is coming from Jerry Zagoda, Shabazz either is going to learn to obey the rules or he'll get a quick geography lesson and learn where Des Moines is. And that is where the affiliate, the NBA D-League affiliate for the Timberwolves is at. This is Flip Saunders saying it.
Love it.
It's a great quote.
I love it.
He's on with Dan Barrero on 740 The Fan and in The Fan down in the cities every Friday, or tries to be. The bigger picture here is that the reason this even made news is because, like you said, Brad, he's had issues coming in, and the Timberwolves didn't really want him. They wanted something else, and they fell back, and he fell into their laps, and they're going, well, all right, we'll take him. And there's a world of talent here. The attitude is an issue. For the life of me, I don't believe the Timberwolves ever wanted to draft Muhammad. I think they wanted somebody different. They wanted a two guard.
Well, they wanted, they wanted the kid out of Georgia, but
Pope. They wanted the Pope. That's his name, out of Georgia.
I don't know. I just remember he had a hyphen in there somewhere.
It's Caldwell Pope, I think, is his name. Yeah, there you go. Doesn't matter. They wanted him. Right. So to me, it just is one of those things that we're going to hear about it, and it makes news because the guy's had issues, lied about his age in college. But, you know, moving on, it just, it seems a little funky. You, Brad, brought something up to me. We'll get back to football here. This is regional, national, whatever. But it appears that the NCAA is going to change some rules as far as football is concerned.
Yeah, yeah.
And Jeff Kolpak of the Foreman reported on this in yesterday's paper, and you brought this to my attention. What are some of these rule changes that you noticed that caught your eye?
I thought, well, there was an interview with Coach Bull about these new rules. And I thought that was the most interesting part of it, was that now, instead of, and we've seen this in the NFL too, where, you know, the helmet to helmet hits are a 15 yard personal foul penalty. Well, now in college, it's an ejection.
Really?
Yeah. And I thought that was really, really interesting to see, because a 15 yard penalty changes the game. It changes the game a fair amount, but throwing a player out
changes the game entirely.
I mean, that's huge. Yeah. I mean,
you're not going to see Marcus Williams do it because he doesn't tackle.
True. But I mean, you know, the Bison are hard hitting defense.
They're very hard hitting defense.
And Coach Bull had a couple of interesting quotes in here. I think it's the right thing to do. Players are so much bigger, stronger, faster, and data shows us right now that we have to adjust with the times, was one quote that he had. And the other one that I thought was really interesting was, I know the officials have been told that if it's a close call, call it.
Which means that they're making split-second decisions themselves, too.
To remove a player from the game on a split-second decision like that, I will be curious when the first time this happens to a Bison player, how similar Coach Bowles' comments are to what we're seeing preseason. And
pretty relaxed right now, obviously.
I mean, right now, but part of it is, I think it said in the article, too, that he's on the committee that came up with this, or that supported the rule change. But man,
it does change the game a large amount. The one game that I can think of where this rule would have changed the game, probably its outcome a little bit, that hit last year, I think it was Christian
Dudzik. I was going to say Dudzik laid somebody out, didn't he?
Against Northern Iowa. 15-yard penalty. It was questionable to me at the time because I looked at it, and it almost looked like he got his helmet at the chest level, maybe under the face mask a little bit, but it was high up, and I think, from what I remember, because I'm trying to recall it in my head, the player looked a little bit unprotected, which is hard. The unprotected rule to me, that can be discussed as
thing.
Well.
I got into debate with a lot of people that I knew, and I was of the minority opinion, at least from the NDSU side. I thought that was a flag. I thought he should have been flagged for that hit. Because, again, you're trying to get those kind of hits out of the
game.
Right,
exactly.
But when it's a 15-yard penalty, I can understand erring on the side of, we're going to throw the flag. You know what? Let's throw the flag because it's a 15-yard penalty. But to err on the side of, we're going to throw the flag if a player gets ejected?
That's big. Because last year, Dudzik gets the 15-yard penalty. This year, same play, he's gone.
Yeah.
And NDSU,
and it's probably a 15-yard penalty on top of it, and Indi- you would assume.
Right, exactly. NDSU is deep defensively. We get that. But when you're looking at other teams, their best player makes a play like that.
Yeah.
On a quarterback or on a running back or on a wideout, then you're going, what are we supposed to do here? Because the guy is just trying to make a play, heat of the moment. It becomes an issue.
And you're, yeah.
It becomes an issue. With the, Clowney, the hit he had last year against Michigan that got...
They'll never call that on a running back, though. If you're hitting a running back, I don't think they'll call it. I know there was somebody, the ACC head of officials, came out and said that he would have, you know, he would have called it. And then another conference official said, no, I wouldn't have. But they only gave the airtime to the guy who said that, yeah, they would have thrown him out. I mean, but that speaks to the problem. That speaks to the interpretation issue.
Right, exactly,
that people are going to have.
That they don't know what's going to come. Here's some other ones that Jeff Kolpak listed in his article on the forum. Offensive blocking below the waist establishes a zone where blocking below the waist is legal. 10-second runoff. If a player is injured in the last minute of each half, that is the sole reason for stopping the clock. An opponent may choose to have 10 seconds removed from the clock. Helmet coming off. A player can remain in the game if his team takes a timeout. This is one is interesting to
the
me.
Spiking
here.
The ball. That was the only other one that I thought was
teams
really
will need a minimum of 3 seconds to spike the ball to stop the clock. If less, they will only have enough time to run a play. So that
doesn't match up to me because I think you can snap the ball and spike it in a second.
But here's the thing that is kind of I guess in college it's different because the clock stops after a first down.
Yep.
But because they have to move the chain, set the ball, whatever. But when you're going up there, a quarterback now has to look in his head and think, okay, how many seconds do I have left? Oh, I have three. Okay, so I can spike the ball now. But if he looks and goes, I have two, fire, or whatever their call is for quick play.
Yeah, I think the three second number is wrong. To me, this reminds me of the Derek Fisher rule in the NBA, where if it has to be in order for you to be able to catch and shoot, there's got to be at least 0.4 seconds on the clock. 0.3 or less, it's got to be a tip.
I think it was point.
It was 0.4.
It's 0.4 because I know whenever basketball, they always talk about there has to be at least 0.3 seconds left to get the shot off because that's what it is.
Well, it's more than 0.3. It's got to be 0.4. 0.3 is 0.3 is a tip, and you can't catch and shoot with 0.3. And it's similar, but I think 3 seconds is too much on there. I think it should be at most two.
Well, clock management becomes a big issue now because if you're down two, and you've gotten a first down to put yourself in field goal position, but there's only 2 seconds left.
Yeah.
You kind of bank on the fact that we can spike the ball.
Yeah.
Can't spike the ball.
I like the idea of the rule. I like the fact that now they can do that and they don't have to wonder, is the clock operator going to stop it in time? Or are they going to have to review it if there's 2 seconds left? You know, if we snap the ball and spike it, is 2 seconds enough or is it not? Well, it depends is really kind of what it is right now or before. It depends on, you know, the clock operator and how quickly they start and stop the clock. Now it's definitive. At least it's definitive where if you've got 3 seconds, great. If not, you know what you got to do. I think it provides more clarity. I just don't like the number.
I think that you're going to find a lot of confusion to me.
Well, I disagree. I think this is less confusing.
You think this is less confusing?
Yes. Because it's definitive.
Confusing is not a good term. I think you're going to find not a lot, but you're going to see a game. I'm taking back words. It's not good. you're going to see a significant moment in a game where this rule comes into effect.
Of course.
Negatively for a team because it's going to be 2 seconds left and they're not going to be able to spike a ball or kick a field goal. They have to run a play and they're not going to win. It could be a playoff game. To me, I think you take that advantage out of a team where they can go up and spike the ball with 2 seconds left because who decided 3 seconds, by the way, anyways?
It sounds like you agree with me. You're arguing like you disagree with me, but I think you agree with me that at least that it's more definitive now where at least you know you don't agree that it's 3 seconds either.
Right. I think that it takes. Yeah, I agree.
You do. You do.
We figured it out. I agreed with you. But yeah, that to me, the other ones have to do with jerseys and they don't really matter. So thank you, Jeff, for giving us something to talk about. Matt Cassel, Christian Ponder.
Yeah.
Let's get into this talk. I'm hearing from down there Matt Cassel's having a better camp than Christian Ponder. I know you hate camp talk. Like, it's the bane of your existence.
Yes.
But Big deal for the, again, big deal, no deal with Christian Ponder, Matt Castle talk. What do you think?
I hate training camp talk. You're absolutely right.
Yes.
I think this is a big deal.
Why?
Because I think however little of a track record that Matt Castle has in the NFL of being able to have a successful season, whatever that track record of his is that much longer than Christian Ponder's. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a reasonable chance that Matt Castle is a better quarterback than Christian Ponder. And I think it's more than reasonable, but go ahead.
Well,
yeah, but I mean, and you can say definitively one way or another if you think so. He was terrible in Kansas City. I mean, he was awful in Kansas City. And the 1 year that he had that was good was in the vaunted New England, you know, system when he came in for the injured Tom Brady. And he had a great year.
Right.
Went 11-5. So I think this is a big deal. The one thing that does not bode well for Matt Castle is he threw 22 passes, I think, in the preseason game on Friday night. Usually you don't put a guy out there to throw the ball 22 times if you think in the first preseason game, if you think he's got a chance of playing significant minutes. Like Matt Barkley, I think, threw 22 times for Philadelphia in their first game. They didn't throw that many times with either Vic or Nick Foles in Philadelphia. I think Ponder threw twice. I want to say he was like one of two, which preseason numbers don't matter, but what I'm saying is that you don't generally put somebody out there that you think could contribute significantly to your team for that many snaps in the first preseason game. That being said, I think we could see Matt Castle sooner rather than later.
Now, you talked about him having bad luck, bad years at Kansas City. He actually had a couple pretty solid years from Kansas City. In fact, I think his best year offensively, he could match it with 2008 New England. 2010, he threw 27 touchdowns, 3,000 yards, over 3,000 yards, 58% completion percentage, seven picks. That's to be discussed.
Seven picks isn't bad.
No, it really isn't. But there again, you see the track record is, okay, he's good. Good offensive line in Minnesota. They established that last year.
Yeah.
Great running back.
Yeah.
The wideouts are there for Matt Castle or Christian Ponder to use. At least Greg Jennings is and Kyle Rudolph. We don't know about the second and third receivers.
Rudolph's
rookies.
Overrated.
No, he's not.
Throwing it out there. Rudolph's overrated.
Why is he overrated?
Because I've seen him play. He doesn't get
open
that
much. No,
give
me a reason why he's overrated.
Look at his numbers.
He's a red zone touchdown catching machine.
How many? Machine?
Nine touchdowns last year. I think maybe 10. 9 or 10 touchdowns last year.
That's not a machine.
That's pretty good.
It's good. It's okay, but
look at tight ends in the league. Name the top five tight ends, okay, that you can come up with off the top of your head.
There are easily five tight ends better than
I'm not
Rudolph.
Saying he's top five, but I'm saying he's probably top 10.
I got to see a list.
You know what?
Wrong. One of these days, wrong, I need to have wrong. Control of the soundboard. This is ridiculous.
Kyle Rudolph is good, but why you got to say something like, he's my homeboy. I love me some Kyle Rudolph. He's good.
I like tight ends.
I'm a huge tight end guy, too.
Overrated.
We could talk about that. That probably will come up in the next podcast.
I smell a wager coming at some point with Kyle Rudolph.
The Matt Castle, Christian Ponder thing. The Vikings can make a run this year in my mind. And you look at the NFC. Who are the top teams out there? San Francisco, Atlanta, Seattle, Green Bay, maybe. But they have to figure out their offensive line. They're vulnerable. There's not a point where you look at them and go, how do we beat Green Bay? It's essentially if we blitz, put Aaron Rodgers on his back a lot, get up a little bit. They can't run. We don't know what the running game is like. The defense is susceptible. Okay, there's that. The Bears, Jay Cutler's not a winner. That's for sure. That's been proven in his years at Denver and now at Chicago. Detroit has so many issues. Can't run the ball, can't defend. The Vikings are in a position now, to me, Brad, where they can make a run in the playoffs. And they're good. They have a solid offensive line. The defense is getting better. They're doing a great job drafting. Your defensive line is solid. They'll have to address issues in the offseason with free agents at the DN position. But the quarterback, to me, is the key.
Yep.
And if Christian Ponder is being challenged by Matt Castle, that tells you that it is a big deal. And that Matt Castle, if he can step in and make this team better, Leslie Frazier will not hesitate, and I hope he won't hesitate, to look at Ponder and go, two games in, your percentage stinks, we're 1-1, we should be 2-0, or we're 0-2, we should be 1-1, whatever, you're done. Castle's my guy, we'll see you later. I think that's the whole reason you bring in a guy like Castle, because he has the proven track record, And if Ponder stinks the first two games, I'm giving him that short of a leash.
I think proven track record's a little strong, but he's got more of a track record.
He has more of a track record. Yeah. But if the leash to me has to be short with Christian Ponder because Matt Cassel's in the backup. So we're going to skip this last one I had about Guardy and the 1,000 wins because it's weak and I didn't know if we'd have, you know, I'm just trying to fill.
That, okay.
That wasn't a great talker. But we'll get into our
national.
Okay, looking at what I have here. You want to stick with football? We can talk fights in training camp. Do you really think they're a big idea? I mean,
or a big deal?
A big deal?
No, because it happens every year. It's just a matter of which team. Oh, this team's had a bunch of fights. I mean, it made for some great video. I think I saw it on like the fake ESPN or something like that on their Twitter account.
The Packers, I think, were a team that had a fight. Then I can't remember some other ones.
I mean, guess
it happens every year.
Big whoop, yeah.
Happens every year.
Big whoop.
So if you see your team fighting in, probably a good thing that they're fighting in training camp and preseason than if they're not, because if they're not, they just don't care. They're out there just kind of going through the motions, and if some guy lights them up and they don't take offense to it.
It's just something to talk about.
Yeah. To me, it's kind of it's no big deal to me as well. PEDs and A-Rod. Now, we had talked about this. We went out for lunch on Wednesday because I was in campus and you took me out.
Yep.
Thank you. I owe you. We talked about A-Rod and this number of 211, which is such a the way suspensions work in Major League Baseball is that there's three ways you get suspended. There's three levels of suspension. There's the 50-game suspension
for PEDs.
Specifically, there's the 50-game suspension for the first offense. There's the 100-game suspension for the second offense, and then there's the lifetime ban for the third. And so Major League Baseball is going to come out of this list with this list of guys that were going to be suspended.
Well, I think that's wrong. I think it's not 150 for the third. I think the
third is suspension. I said game or life. Lifetime
ban.
Yeah,
life. Okay, I'm sorry. I misheard you there.
You combined the 100 and the 50.
Yes, I did.
So Major League Baseball comes out with this. First, they want to suspend A-Rod for life, which is strictly a Bud Selig reaction to how much he hates A-Rod.
And that was reported but never confirmed by any, you know, we heard that was what they wanted to do behind the scenes. How much legitimacy or how much real credibility there was to that, I have questions about.
So then they come up with this number of 211, which I think puts them in a box, in my opinion, that now you've given the players' union and A-Rod an opportunity to go at them and go, hey, 211 is not a number we agreed on in the joint drug agreement.
It's a weird number. I mean, obviously the number was because they have to put it. They can't just say we want to suspend you for the rest of this season and next season. We have to put a number on it. And that number happened to be 211.
But now you give an opportunity for A-Rod to play all year, which I think he will do because they'll just drag out this whole appealing of the
suspension.
Well,
they say the arbitrator isn't going to hear it until after the season.
Right, so there you go. He's going to appeal the suspension so he'll be able to play all year long, which keeps him in the limelight for another 50, 40 games, whatever's left here, the next 2 months. You keep him in the limelight. You keep him getting hammered with questions and getting booed by fans, and it just looks bad for Major League Baseball to keep a guy out there that admittedly has taken performance-enhancing drugs, and whether the evidence against him is so strong, they don't know what the evidence is. There's been talks about the fact he tried to buy some reports from Biogenesis about who had been taking this and who had been doing that. He tried to buy them so that Major League Baseball couldn't get them. Be that as it may, so on and so forth, I think that Major League Baseball should have went ahead and said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to suspend you for life and stick with it, because then they have something to go off. 211 is just not a number. So if I'm the players' union, I go, well, it's either 150 or life. Where's 211 fall into this group?
Yeah. I
think it was a bad move by Major League Baseball to throw out the 211 number.
I disagree that they should have suspended him for life.
Because if you start
suspending a guy for life for using PEDs and lying about it, where does that end? I mean, all of a sudden, you're going to have a lot of guys banned for life. And if Major League Baseball had to do it over again, I wonder if they would have done that to Pete Rose. I mean, that hasn't worked out real well for them.
Well,
I mean,
you talk to anybody, I'm sure, within the hierarchy of Major League Baseball, they go, yeah, absolutely. I mean, to the Rose thing.
But it, from a perception point, it hasn't worked out real well for them. It hasn't been a lot of fun having Pete Rose banned for life. That story would have gone away a lot quicker if they'd have just said, you know, you can get into the Hall of Fame, but you can't coach again.
Do you think Pete Rose will ever get into the Hall of Fame?
Yes. Yeah, not when Bud Selig is commissioner, but and it right. might be after he's dead. But yeah, I think someday he's
I think
there.
So too, and I think he deserves to be because he didn't do this.
Yeah, and again, so if you're gonna suspend A-Rod for it. All the other guys that have lied about, I mean, then you're looking
Ryan
at
Braun,
you're looking
Nelson
at Ryan
Cruz.
Braun. All these guys, you're banning these guys for life. And I don't know that that's a slope that
you want to go
that
down.
You want to go down unless you've got three positive tests.
I understand where you're coming from, but from my standpoint, the reason you go with the lifetime suspension is because that's a number you
it's
came
at
up
least
with.
An option.
That's
yeah.
the number you came up with. You said, okay, this is one of the things we agreed on. And then the players union comes back with, can you prove he's done it three times? If you can't, let's talk 100 games because maybe it was the second offense.
Because we can, I mean, it sounds like they can prove at least twice.
Right.
Because he admitted to doing it in Texas, which he got 0 games for.
Okay.
And he's,
so there's your 50-game suspension okay. now.
And then there's
this biogenesis
thing.
So if that's the two, then that's 100. But so, to come out with 211, the players union can go, are you kidding me? So, this is not a number we agreed on. This is unfair. Yeah. And you had asked the question.
I could see 150 games. We're going to suspend you for the 50 for the first time and the 100 for the second
the
time because
100.
you've done it twice that we know of.
Which would be, I think, probably correct. I don't know if the players union would have much to argue off of that. But again, to me, it was a number that they should have.
I get your point. I get your point that they, with that number, they put themselves in a little bit of a box. But I think they wanted to try to make a little stronger statement because of the shady things and the dealings behind.
They don't
the scene.
Like A-Rod. I don't think anybody in Major League Baseball likes A-Rod because he's arrogant, and the quotes he had about he's playing for his life is just dumb.
He's trying, and I heard this, and I'll give full credit to the Dan Patrick Show for this because I think I heard it from Dan first. He's trying to turn himself into a victim.
Somehow.
Yeah, somehow he's trying to make it seem like he's been victimized in all this, and it's just a joke.
It's not going to work for him. And to me, I would like it, and I think Major League Baseball would like it, just to go away. With PEDs and A-Rod in general, we've got about 4 minutes left on this podcast, and so the final question we have.
Yeah.
Major League Baseball.
I've been saying, yeah, I've liked your topics today. I'm going to give you props for once. You did a good job.
Major League Baseball's team-run Twitters have been going absolute bonkers the last couple weeks. Earlier in the month, the Rays overtook Boston in the standings, which I think has gone back to where it was, where Boston has the lead in the AL East. Doesn't matter. But the Rays tweeted out, I think, a picture of Fenway and the Green Monster, and have the standings at Green Monster, and they said, hey, Boston, change the standings. This was the Rays official team Twitter page, Twitter
yep.
feed.
Yep.
Boston tweets back at them saying, don't worry, we'll see you in Tampa in 4 games. Or what did he say?
We'll see you in Tampa for our next home games
yeah,
or something like that.
Yeah, we'll see you
like
in Tampa
that.
For our next home stand.
Yeah.
Something like that. And then earlier this week, the Washington Nationals, Bryce Harper hit a home run and then stared at the ball, was really cocky about it. Whatever.
I didn't think it was as bad as what people blew it out. But yeah, he took a look. Yeah.
And so, Atlanta, the guy, it's Julio Teheran, I think, gave up the homer.
Yep.
He was still pitching when Harper was up again, and of course, boom, plunked him.
Drilled him.
Yep, bench is clear, whatever. And then Atlanta's Twitter feed tweeted out, clown move, bro. And so the Nationals Twitter feed came back with, what was a clown move? You plunking a 20-year-old? Or getting the homer hit off of you. Who is running these Twitter feeds, and why do they feel the need to just bark at each other over social media?
I don't care, but I love this. I love this. And as far as things that, and we've talked about in the last few weeks about Major League Baseball becoming more of a regional sport, this kind of thing is going to get a more national headlines and more national stuff and make people pay attention. I think this is fantastic. I love every bit of this. Let's add a little spice. Baseball, what's the biggest complaint about baseball? Baseball's a little boring. Let's throw a little spice on there. I mean, it's not nothing over the top. It's not huge, but I like this.
To me, it is annoying because I don't go to the team's Twitter page to see them react like a teenager to things that are going on the field. It's much cooler to me if Bryce Harper were to tweet out, glad I got plunked for hitting a homer. Yeah, that, but to me, see, that's cooler and then Teron then firing
back. I disagree. I mean, it's, and that's fine, too.
Player Twitter beef to me would be cooler.
But then I think, but then it's, oh, you know, Harper's so immature, and then we're talking about Bryce Harper and how he needs to grow up, and instead, hey, it's the team tweeting it out. It's a faceless, nameless entity that's sending this out. So we just get to enjoy it for what it is instead of having to dissect, oh, why is Harper doing this, and, you know, he needs to act bigger than that. It's the team page, and they're having a little fun back and forth with each other.
Yeah, I see your point. To me, it's just, it's annoying because I don't... I don't care. Do it on the field. I'd rather have the players kind of get the beef going. Here's the other thing you have to remember, too. The Rays-Boston thing, that has a little bit more substance to it because they're closer. The Nationals are absolutely getting pounded by the Braves. And so if I'm the Braves Twitter feed, I don't even put anything out. I just go, oh, nice homer, Bryce. You guys are down 15 games.
Maybe you tweet out a picture of the score of the standings at the park. Something, I think maybe that's the answer.
Something of that nature. So that's all the topics we have for this edition of the Pinto and White Shadow Show, the 006 edition. Next week, 007.
I got something special for you next week.
Oh, you do?
I do.
Okay. Yep. Well, good, because we're going to be talking to Brent Vegan, hopefully, offensive coordinator for NDSU. We'll break down. We'll talk offense for the NDSU team, the side of the ball that really gets ignored because the defense is so good. But kind of
how often does that happen?
Exactly. But they averaged, I think, 33 points a game last year, one of the best offenses in the nation. And no one really ever talks about him. We'll talk Carson Wentz. We'll probably talk about Bo's comments on him and get to all of that next week. So, again, if you want to give us some feedback on the show, we did it in the beginning. We'll do it to end the show. You can email us, pinto.whiteshadow@gmail.com. My Twitter feed, @PintoKFGO.
And I'm @TheBisonGuy.
So, make sure and give us your feedback on Facebook, through email, on Twitter. And we'll gladly respond to you and try to fix everything up here. One more thing, Brad, before we...
The iTunes feed.
The iTunes feed is having some issues right now. It's all technical, baseball stock, technical issues right now that I'm trying to figure out. Hopefully we'll get it back and live and running here this week. If not, I'll keep it up to date. But otherwise, you can find us on KFGO.com or 740thefan.com. So for Brad Jones, the White Shadow, I'm Daniel Pinto Gunnarsson, and we'll talk to you next week.